hear that? This is madness.
With 900 years old, you reach for the good you are not.
Nerf herder.
I am a Jedi.
It's a little short for a stormtrooper.
We have what they grow beyond.
Welcome back to the Droids You're Looking For, a Star Wars podcast. Alongside Ryan and Sam, I am Mike, and we are pleased to be joined by Matt as he's filling in for Chris. Without Chris, we have to wonder whether or not Matt here is going to bring some hot and fresh takes. I don't know, guys, can we trust him to fill in this role that Chris has always brought to the pod?
Well, first off, Mike, it's been a while since I've been on the pod with you, and I forgot how iconic the intro is. It was great to hear you do it again. Great to be back with you, buddy. Also, Matt should know, Chris is quite litigious when it comes to the hot and fresh takes. So he's playing at his own risk on that one.
I'm more than familiar with Chris's veiled legal threats, and I got some hot and fresh ones loaded.
We've all known...
Always
we've
awkward
all...
when someone says that.
We, Chris and I have known Matt for a long time, and I think Matt can deliver the hot and fresh. I think Matt's full of hot and fresh.
Piping hot, piping fresh. Matt Davidson here. Thanks for having me on, fellas.
You know, we usually don't give away our last names, but Matt, I'm glad you're just going for it.
He'll also be saying all of our last names.
Yeah, I mean, Star Wars fans never get angry at anybody for having an opinion online, so...
Also, good luck finding this Matt Davidson.
Yeah, right. Well, sure.
Coming up on this edition of the pod, we're going to talk about the possible leaked poster just a little bit. We will get into no spoilers about it. We can give you a break. You want to skip that, go ahead. We're also going to talk about Matt and his interest in Star Wars, experience with Star Wars throughout his life, first encounter with the series, character, all of it. We'll get into it. And of course, Marvel Endgame is coming up. We've got Avengers on the horizon. We're going to talk about Phase 1. Now, it's not quite into the Star Wars universe, but we know there's been a lot of mirroring of the Marvel Cinematic Universe with what Star Wars was trying to do, and of course all of us are Marvel fans as well. So we're going to talk about all of that on the podcast this edition of the show, and of course be sure to follow us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, Gmail. Sam, I'm going to toss it to you. Facebook, what is the address for us?
I'm divining it. I'm communing with the mirror realm with Doctor Strange. It's the Droids Podcast. Search us on Facebook and you'll find us.
This time you said it with a little more confidence than you did in the last few editions of the pod, so I'll give it to you. Twitter and Instagram, you can find us, Droids Pod, Gmail, droidspod@gmail.com. Rate us and review us on iTunes. It is something that helps us out, gets more listeners in here. We'd love to grow the community of droid heads because, you know, I think we put on a show that's worthy of having a community.
Jimmy Buffett has the parrot heads. We have the droid heads. Let's get exactly as right. big a following as our Uncle Jimmy.
Wonder what that Venn diagram looks like.
Well, let's start off just briefly with the poster leak that just came out today. For those of you who do not want any potential spoilers, let us say at the beginning, we're not on board that this is an actual leak poster. We don't think
dubious,
this is
there's
real.
There's some dubious incorporations in this poster us think that it may not be legit.
If you want to hang around and listen to this, not be fearing of any spoilers, to be honest, if you're afraid of a poster giving away too much, you probably are never going to pay any attention to any of the marketing, so I don't think you'd be listening to begin with. So this possible spoiler, just take a break right now. We'll come back in 5 minutes if you want to skip it, and we'll get into our conversation with Matt. But in this poster, which you can find all over the interwebs at the moment, it looks like a pretty standard layout for the poster. You have, of course, Rey at the top of the poster, Kylo in the middle, all the main characters, the Knights of Ren, some red stormtroopers, a couple of the new characters are in there as well, a new droid. It looks like you can tell that the lightsaber of originally Luke Skywalker's, or originally Anakin Skywalker's, that was destroyed in The Last Jedi has been repaired with what potentially looks like some sort of brown tape. And then, of course, Kylo Ren's helmet has been pieced back together so he can wear his helmet again. But the thing that maybe gives this away as not authentic is that C-3PO is not only holding Chewbacca's crossbow, he has Chewbacca's bandolier on, and Rey's staff slung over his shoulder. And I just have to think that even if there is a moment in the film where he has to carry everything for all the other characters, it wouldn't make it into the poster.
Yeah, it would be a big giveaway. I do agree that the princess layout is very familiar, and it looks like a Drew Struzan poster. And there has been some bad Photoshop in movie posters historically, but I have to believe that the... And I'm not picking on whoever made this quote-unquote fake poster. But the ramp at the bottom of from the red stormtroopers to the black... I find it hard to believe that would get past Disney's QC, you know?
Well, I will just jump in and say that I think that the, you know, when you're talking about sort of like the workmanship, the craftsmanship,
yeah.
And, you know, I do a lot of graphic design for work, and I have to say this is among the, I think this is among the better sort of fan edits, fan created posters out there in terms of that work. And I will say that also I think it's better than the original Spider-Man Homecoming poster that they released, which was notably one of like the worst instances of Photoshop, and that did make it past, at least I think,
yeah,
probably it was Sony's marketing. I don't know that Disney got to approve that one, I think it's pretty clearly on close inspection a fake, but I think it I can see why this one took off and went viral. It does look pretty good. I think the layout does mimic the princess layout, as Ryan said.
Yeah,
does mimic existing.
The general layout.
Does mimic, you know, man, the existing stuff. But the other thing that I think is interesting in this poster, that this like fan poster, is that some of the stuff, the images of that they have of Finn and Poe in particular, do look like the costumes we've seen them in, like in that final, like the on the last day of principal photography, the photo that was released. So like that lends just a whiff of credence to this, but I think everyone's pretty safe to assume that you can look at this with eyes unspoiled.
Is that a
look at this with a grain of salt in your eyes?
Is that a member of Daft Punk?
Wait, are you talking about all of the guys in black wearing helmets, or are you talking about the character on the right? I mean, I can't tell, to be honest.
The character on the right, the one in the purple, right at the point of like Rey's lightsaber.
It looks like a character from the Battlestar TV series, not the recent one, not the 2004 Battlestar, but like the 70s, like the 78 Battlestar.
So that's nobody that that you guys recognize either.
Nope.
That's a goddamn member of Daft Punk.
That's like that's
what the frack. That's for an audience of one.
I actually believe that someone got access to marketing materials where they had images of the main characters for episode 9 and then made a poster that felt very realistic and then put in a joke in it to really make it stand out that it isn't real.
I would buy that, Mike. These do look like actual assets that you would maybe see on like an action figure package or something. I would totally buy that.
You think they got their hands on the assets?
So in all
Then this could be a bigger thing. You know, maybe how much is leaked? Maybe this is just the tip of the iceberg.
Could be a lot
there
more.
There could be PNGs. There could be PNGs of anything out there.
I'm realizing, just so that we know, that Matt is referring to the Daft Punk character that Matt has referred to is listed below. If you scroll down on the link that we're looking at, is a character named Zori.
I'd also like to say that Daft Punk isn't a character. It's a way of life.
Oh, man. Is he always like this?
Always.
Matt, have you never listened to the show?
I have. I guess I just drone you out.
I think, though, if you consider the Knights of Ren potentially being in this, if we want to talk about an actual implication to say that maybe these are real assets that they used to make this poster, that is, I don't know about concerning, but just it takes a step back. And one of the things we've been concerned about with JJ is whether or not he would take a big step back in the series following The Last Jedi, and maybe he's closing the loop on characters he introduced and introducing a few more. One very big absence, not only from the poster, but from the marketing materials that resulted in this poster, is Rose. There's no Rose in
it's
any
true.
Of this.
And if this was a real JJ poster, you know the Captain Phasma would be pictured like ridiculously prominently.
I do think the idea that I mean, if we're going down the rabbit hole of, like, this is really interesting. I feel like we're slowly convincing ourselves that there is, like, more legitimacy to this than meets the eye. But, like, I do think that the inclusion of what appears to be the Knights of Ren is, like, is interesting. And I would take it as, I would have some concern. I'm not concerned yet, I guess. You know, I guess we'll see how far they want to go. I think if this feels like a pendulum swing, like right back to what JJ did with The Force Awakens, that, yeah, would potentially be a bummer, because you guys all know on this pod we're a big fan of The Last Jedi. But if they're included as a way of bringing them back in the series as characters mentioned, and with Kylo Ren's ascendancy to sort of his own supreme leader status, bringing in, you know, bringing the boys along as his main knights, like that is not uninteresting to me. So
what's interesting to me about it, even though I don't think it's real, is I never thought of the Knights of Ren as being depicted as like individual characters. You know, I assumed that it would just be like a group of dudes like in robes, kind of like following them around, that kind of thing. But in this, they all have similar yet differing outfits. Which I don't think that these are the ones, but that is an interesting idea. It's kind of like, remember, like, Destiny's Child used to go to, like, the VMAs wearing, like, similar but different dresses? Like, it was all, like, part of a unit,
obviously. Matt, you remember that, right?
I don't remember any of this, but I understand your point.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm just saying it's a part of the Knights of Ren I never thought of.
I do want to continue with this thought. I don't want to reward that illusion, but my Star Wars knowledge is not as involved as the three of yours, but I'd say this reads because Kylo Ren is like more of an individual, and that seems like something he would encourage in his disciples, right? Or at least that's a theme that's stuck out to me before.
Oh, that's interesting. Like, he's sort of the he's a little bit of the rebel.
Yeah,
Sith side.
The mold, you know, the leash didn't suit him well. So I think that's something that if he taught the Force his way, he would let people go, like, pick whatever mask you want. Yeah, you want to wear a robe, you don't want to wear a robe, whatever.
Yeah, like, he does seem pretty easy going.
Absolutely. He's rethinking things. He's the millennial Vader, right?
Ooh, with a millennial Falcon. Oh, man. Matt, you have been listening to the podcast. All right.
Matt, now you said you don't know as much about Star Wars as any of us, but would you say you know more or less about Star Wars than Chris?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure.
Chris, so calls... I gave you an either or and you gave me a yes.
I definitely do. Chris calls me and asks me for advice before he records.
About Star Wars?
Yeah. Yeah, he asked me for Star Wars advice.
About Star Wars, about what stocks to buy, you know.
All of it. Chris has never made a decision without me.
I think we've kind of gotten into it a little bit, Matt. Let's start this conversation about your experience with Star Wars. Tell us about your background on Star Wars, when you watched it the first time. Are you a dedicated fan? Maybe you're not as into it as the three of us, or you are more so than Chris. But tell us about how you're connected to the galaxy far, far away.
I mean, I'd say I have a nerd totem pole, right? And I feel like I've phrased it this way to some of these guys offline, but...
It's a family show, Matt.
Right, like... Should I start over?
Ryan has made sure this is not a family show on every single appearance he makes.
If he didn't say it, I was going to. I was just about to come in with that.
Chris no, was very afraid of me swearing. I've been warned, but apparently Ryan hasn't been.
Go on.
Anyway, like, I think a lot of people do, because in fandom, you know, there are people who are fans of Star Wars and Lord of the Rings, Marvel, DC, right? And like Marvel is the top of my nerd totem pole, right? But I'd say Star Wars is like definitely in the middle. And I think in my experience, like, if Star Wars is not first, that makes me feel like a casual fan compared to a lot of other, certainly compared to you guys, but like other people, like I like, there's just this whole other, like, staple of Star Wars characters that I have no idea who they are, right? But I love Han Solo just as much as the next guy does.
Where do you fall on Constable Zuvio?
Yeah, I have no idea who that is. I understand he makes for a good toy, you know? made people some money, some good marketing. Is that a real person, even? Did you just throw a name at me?
No, that's a real... No, well, I mean, is it a real person?
You actually kind of got it really right, I gotta say.
You had it right, that's the toy. It's the toy from The Force Awakens that they released that was cut from the movie.
Yeah. I mean, I know that Star Wars kind of has that history with, like... Like, wasn't that Lucas's thing? Like, he was like, yeah, and my contract, he got, like, all the marketing or the merchandising in the contract or something.
Yeah, he got the merchandising rights.
The ancillary rights.
Super smart, super smart. Yeah, I have no idea who that person is. But, like, yeah, I don't know. It goes pretty far back. Like, whenever I was in elementary school, I remember them coming on TNT. Like, back when you could just, like, catch a Star Wars movie playing... as part of the Sunday matinee, and like sitting down and just like, what is this? And then my mom, who's always been a big sci-fi fan, was like, all right, I think it's time to get some Star Wars going in this household. And like, they rented the tapes from the library, like back when they were like those coveted, like, you know, it's like
you used to have to put your name on a list.
Yeah, I like, and our library had like some copies that were just like gross. Right, and like,
did you have those like plastic slip covers that you had to like pinch?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, and like it was just, or they like bought them and they like cut the cardboard VHS box up and then like slipped it down the front.
Yeah,
and then, you know, and it had like THX real big, as though that were ever a actual selling point for anything. And then I also like I went in theaters whenever George Lucas redid them, and I think like enjoyed the giant lizard, you know, walking around, and like I don't think it offended me as much until like later in life I realized like he kind of like you know wasn't such a great decision in the end, but
that
at the
ring
time
on
it
the
was
Death
like,
Star explosion though, you know what I mean.
Yeah, that's very true. Like,
it just looks better.
At the time, like, digesting it as, like, how old? Like, I might have been, like, 12 or probably younger. It was just cool being able to go to a movie theater.
It was 97, yeah, so you were, like, 9.
Right? So, I don't know, yeah. I don't know if that answers your question. Probably.
No, it does. It does. And I think that you hit on something that's very true, that does affect, and it's has been particularly like prevalent in the Star Wars fan community lately, that it's like I don't know if it's because this the sort of the Disney era of Star Wars has happened, you know, deep into the internet age, but there definitely seems to be a more trenchant vocal and like very like I was going to say partisan, but what I mean is within Star Wars. I don't mean like in our real world politics, but that too. But like, just like group of vocal fans who can really like people take sides and dig in way harder than I certainly remember anyone when we were younger, you know, and even folks who, you know, for all, you know, all their life had Star Wars at the top of their totem. Like, I don't know that the disagreements or the differing opinions ever got as heated as they have these last couple of years. So I could totally see how, you know, Matt, you feel that, oh, by virtue of you know, not being in the in the majority with the with it at the top, like the majority of the Star Wars fan community. That it can be like, oh, I'll hang back.
I definitely, like, not that other nerd communities can't be obnoxious or, like, uninviting, right? But I've definitely, in Star Wars, like, I'll feel out of my depth pretty quickly. Like, sure. I'll have to describe things as, like, you know, like the triangle spaceship, the big triangle spaceship, and somebody will have to tell me what it is. I know it's a Star Destroyer.
Why didn't you guys vet this person?
I actually,
no, he's
as
cool.
Much as,
he's cool. I swear he's cool, guys. He's cool. He's,
as much as
chill.
I know Marvel, I have to do that a lot too. Like, I was talking to a huge Marvel fan the other day, and I was like, you know, the Avenger that's afraid to leave his house sometimes, Sentinel, right? Sentinel. And they looked at me like I was crazy because Sentinels are giant mutant hunting robots, and who I was talking about was Sentry. So, like, I carry.
So
it
what
across,
you're saying is you're
sounds
like
sound like a bunch of nerds.
What I'm saying is, yeah, I'm an airhead.
And, you're an across the board yeah. idiot.
Yes, absolutely.
Got it. All right, glad we got there. Well, so like, let's just digging a little deeper. Do you have a? Is there like a favorite movie?
Favorite movie might branch into what would be a hot take. Actually, not to you guys, but I think my favorite movie is the most recent one, or the Last Jedi is my
okay.
Is my
you can
favorite.
You can stay on the pod.
Whew. Yeah,
although he did You're... call it the most recent one.
Yeah,
that's true.
Yeah,
I'm
you
sorry.
Dodged you dodged the
you
bullet.
You really
there.
Want to count? Like, I mean, Solo was a disappointment.
It was
to me, but like the Last Jedi, I thought it was great. I think you know, like I have the same criticism. Like it takes that weird turn where it goes to that casino world. But then we get Benicio del Toro, who is just, like, interesting to watch. And at the end of the day, I think that's probably why, like, Han Solo was so fun in the first movie. What, does he have, like, 15 minutes of dialogue total? But, like, everybody, like, was enthralled with that character. That might, you guys probably know that. But I thought that with, like, oh, yeah, we got Benicio del Toro out of that weird... side plot, so that's a win, and I got to watch that character just be interesting to listen to for a while, and then we got back to what I thought was the best story. I was actually like into the fact that it broke from the like that theme that you know Star Wars movies stay pretty close to. I dug like the killing of Snoke was. Mm. An awesome moment to me. Like I didn't see it coming at all, and I found like Kylo Ren kind of monologizing about it being their time, and like that, you know, we don't have to be bad and we don't have to be good, we can just be straight up powerful. Like I thought that was a very relevant speech in the context of just like where millennials are right now, like in the and so that I think that resonated with me for that reason,
man. But, millennial yeah. Vader exiting on Millennial Falcon on the way out on episode 9 is gonna be a great way to finish the series.
Matt, let me ask you, what's your take on Porgs?
What's my take on Porgs?
Yeah.
I mean, whatever, man, it keeps it fun. I like whatever, you know, like I'm a Marvel guy. Like Marvel's full of so much dumb stuff like that that's just like in the back. Ultimately it doesn't matter. Like I know there's like an opinion, right, that like those were dumb and like made like what should have been like a dark scene kind of like lively, but it's like it's Star Wars. Like I don't know, why is the milk blue? Why aren't there porgs? I don't know, it's fun.
Yeah, I think it would have been like at a, like I like the porgs. I don't know why people were so mad. I think it would have been out of place if like Snoke got cut in half, fell over, and then there were like three porgs behind them. Like,
yeah.
I mean, the
pretty
porgs
good
are.
Rhyme.
Thank you. Luke Skywalker. I thought he was a man.
The porgs are hardly minions, right?
Although they do all have names like Kevin and Stuart.
They all have a different variation on the same outfit.
Yeah.
I enjoyed
they
the
wear
porgs.
Overalls.
I enjoyed them very much in this movie. I just thought that it didn't make any sense to me that Chewie didn't actually eat the pork he had already cooked.
Yeah, it was wasteful. It
I mean,
just
don't
was,
kill
yeah.
any more, but you already cooked that one. So enjoy yourself a meal and maybe turn around so the other porgs aren't watching you with their child baby eyes.
Was there kind of like you could do that thing that people do to dogs, right, where they like fake throwing the ball, right?
I feel that like would get the porgs. I think that would have gotten.
I thought you were going to talk about eating a dog.
Again, a lack of vetting is a problem. So I take it from your earlier comments, Han Solo is maybe your favorite character?
Yeah, I think. If not the, you know, the real Han Solo.
Not Alden Ehrenreich. You're not putting an Alden Ehrenreich poster on
your wall. Nah, man.
Let me ask you, Matt. Is your favorite Ninja Turtle Raphael?
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought so.
I mean, that reads.
I do want to ask just a clarifying point here. And unlike Ryan sounds, I'm happy with the answer of Han Solo as a favorite character. I am just curious.
Why are you implying that I'm unhappy with that?
I don't know, because the Ninja Turtle thing, it sounded...
Ninja Turtle is Raphael.
Oh, well, that's my second favorite. I guess we're all on the same side here.
Gotcha. Your favorite's Leonardo?
No, it's Donnie.
Mm, we'll see.
Which is weird. Apparently Donnie's like the lowest percentage of favorite.
Yeah, Donnie is like Ravenclaw, right? No one ever accuses anyone of being Donatello, and nobody ever chooses Donatello.
Yeah, Donatello is like the one, much like Ravenclaw's, that people's parents would be like, why don't you hang out with him?
You know? Donnie had the longest reach in the arcade game. Because
that's very true.
Oh, yeah, it's got
that's not a bad point.
Sure.
So I think that's where it all began. But what I want to ask, Matt...
Hold on. I got to get in mine at least. Mikey's my guy, and it's only because when I was a kid and a character had my name, I was like, yes.
And Chris, absolutely. A clear Michelangelo movie.
yeah, for sure.
So the question I have for you, Matt, is I have to ask, is your favorite character Han Solo, or is your favorite character Harrison Ford?
Favorite character is Harrison Ford. Yeah, easy.
He has in common what you were talking about, Benicio del Toro, dawned on me. What those two characters have in common is that they both seem very comfortable in the world. They don't have this aspect of them that's like gee golly, like I'm being introduced to all this. They both like exist in the world as it is and seem comfortable in it, which is very appealing to watch.
It's just any other day to those guys. Like,
yeah,
and I got to put up with this crap. Not like, oh, I'm flying through space. This is incredible. What a fantastic world I live in. And it's like, ugh, I got to fly through space. Like, can I get a minute? You know, like.
Yeah, and there's something that is like all the more impressive about the actors who really can pull that off. And it's like this mix of like nonchalance without seeming like they don't care.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah.
And wait, I think Guardians of the Galaxy has that in spades, right? Like it's probably leans a little too hard into like everyone has weird Han Solo moments in that movie.
Yeah.
But, you know, like it does feel very lived in. There are very few characters in those movies that are in awe of what's going on around them.
Yeah, in that scene in the Millennium Falcon in episode 4 where, you know, Luke is like training with the lightsaber, Han, I just realized that like Han is, if that scene was to go on, it would end with Han like putting a magazine under his arm and going to the bathroom. You know?
Yeah. I think that like this is mentioned pre-pod, right? But it's, yeah, like Han Solo is my favorite character, and my favorite moment is really like any time Han has a one-sided conversation with Chewie. Like
Hang on, Solo had that in spades. Well, I don't understand. You had a problem with that?
I'm sorry. Anytime Harrison Ford has a one-sided conversation, it's like he is the best incredulous line deliverer in the business, and he just like hearing like nonsense and then seeing Harrison Ford whip around and try and like defend himself to some insult that was just hurled at him is it's gold every time, and it's why it was so great in episode 7. Like you
agreed.
Just got more of that.
Agreed.
Yeah.
And a lot of the times when interviewers are having conversations with Harrison Ford, it seems like they're having a one-sided conversation. That guy is sleepy.
It's just like and Indiana Jones is really just a series of movies where Harrison Ford is annoyed at the people around him. And that's great to watch. That's great filmmaking.
I know this is not in line with the way this conversation is going, but I can't help but think about when you've heard about Han Solo's role, a lot of it is about being the audience's voice in a world where everyone is in awe, where everyone else is buying into you know, to the religion, the Jedi, you know, to have him be the voice of the audience who is more skeptical and maybe cynical, it can allow you to more easily digest this fantastical world when you have a character who's going to say some of the things maybe you would say if it was happening to you.
Yeah, you kind of need someone to, and pardon my French, take a little bit of the piss out of it, as they say. You know, you need someone to acknowledge it.
That's fair. That's different. I don't know. We're hitting on like similarities and differences to the. I think it's interesting we're going down this like comparison with the Benicio del Toro thing, because I think what those two have in common is like the level of sort of like. It's a mix of like charisma and nonchalance and comfort and all these things we've like mentioned. But then I think it's also very different in that, like, I don't think Benicio del Toro was there to in any way be like the audience surrogate.
Necessarily Benicio,
I'm interested in comparing these characters now. Cause like Matt, that's like an interesting thing you brought up. I never would have put those two in the same sentence really. But I do think there is a similarity between those two actors and how they approach a role in this type of film that is interesting. If the purpose they're serving is very different in the films.
Yeah, I almost think it might not be any more complicated than just those are two actors that are famously interesting to watch. And some people have that quality, and that's what was missing in Solo, really. Was just that, like, the title character, and it was a fool's errand. I feel bad for the actor whose name is escaping me, right? Sentinel, right? Or
Alden Ehrenreich.
You make a Lando movie. If you made a Lando movie, that's an actor who would have been compelling enough to keep your attention. No matter.
Were there any headlines for him that said Alden Hair Ain't Right? Because it was off a little.
Yeah,
it really was. Sure.
It was off, but man, that was a reach, Ryan.
So was that.
Someone's got to bring the hot and fresh.
I did like Beckett too, but again, that's like Woody Harrelson is like an actor who's made a career out of being interesting to watch. Like, he's good in everything, so of course he's going to be good in that. And you hire this new guy who nobody really knows, like, aside from, like, what? He was in Hail Caesar, right? But, like, now he's got to reprise the role of one of the most beloved, curmudgeons of all time. And it was never going to happen.
It was a thankless task.
Yeah.
True, but I still stand by the biggest problem with that movie was not him. I don't think that was the biggest problem with the film.
It was Ron Howard.
Ron Howard, right. My boy from Willow. Absolutely, absolutely not.
You're barking up the wrong tree on this one against Ryan, I got to tell you.
What? Are you a Willow naysayer?
No, I'm not a Willow naysayer.
Oh, you're
wrong. I'm not even a Ron Howard naysayer. I'm just saying he is what he is, and that's what he is. Ron Howard was a guy, he is a guy, and he'll always be a guy.
All right, we have covered Ron Howard territory on this podcast more than anyone ever imagined.
Welcome to Roncast.
Ron Pod. Okay, let's talk about Marvel. Let's talk about Avengers. Endgame is on its way. So let's talk about Phase 1 of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. The first thing that jumps out to me, and I know we'll talk about a lot of this, but Sam, you put down the order of these films being released. I am shocked to be reminded that Thor and Captain America First Avenger came out after Iron Man 2.
Isn't that weird?
It's so strange to
me. We had two Iron Man movies before they were even introduced.
Well, it goes back to, I think, and I think in some ways it was like a successful, I mean, obviously it's been successful for Marvel, but like it was a smart play because like up until that point, the way in which these movies were released were as, you know, as trilogies or series, you know, independent of one another. And so it's like, you know, the first Iron Man came out the same summer as The Dark Knight, right? And that's the second Batman movie that's out now. And so Iron Man 2 was, I believe, 2010. So from 2008 to 2010, you know, the biggest sort of interesting piece or like thing that was weird about Marvel was that it was like, oh yeah, remember that like Robert Downey Jr. popped up in Hulk? that was, you know, it's like this stuff is connected type thing.
Did he?
But
I haven't seen this in theaters. Is he in the post credits?
It's either the first post credits like immediately, or it's maybe it's like the la- no, it's not. It's the last scene of the movie.
So it's like it a was, stinger.
It originally was a post credit scene, and they moved it up and they swapped it because
they were like,
of the success.
I don't think anyone's staying
because of the success of Iron Man.
Yeah.
And the perhaps rightly predicted less than success of The Incredible Hulk. But yeah, the last scene is so it's after the Hulk has, you know, fought Abomination in Harlem, kind of wrecked Harlem but saved the day and fled, and it's General Ross is in like a bar throwing back shots, and it's just William Hurt saying reload and then drinking a shot and then saying reload, and he's like really he's really selling how hammered nice. Each shot is making him. And then Downey walks in and they have like a joke about like oh, you always wear such nice suits. And Robert Downey Jr. is talking about like, you know, wanting to recruit for a team they're putting together, and the implication is that they want Banner for the Hulk. But apparently, as written, I learned this recently, as written, the original thing was going to be that he was trying to recruit Blonsky, aka the Abomination, to bring on, and that that was gonna like somehow go south, and so they were gonna like Banner was gonna be the backup. Which
interesting.
I think it's like, you know, the fact that The Incredible Hulk wasn't a success, the fact that Norton dropped out and they probably had some time to negotiate and figure out what they were doing with the character, and the fact that, like, there's a number of things that I think led to that not being necessarily pursued. It's an interesting, like, I don't know what you call it, like, artifact, right?
But, yeah, I was just about to say that because I was like, I can't believe Robert Downey Jr. appeared in The Incredible Hulk, but because... that was a Universal release when Paramount was releasing the Marvel movies. It was before the Disney acquisition. I think the Avengers was the first Disney one. But it also reminded me as an artifact that, like, the Robert Downey Jr. of Marvel Phase 1 is not the Robert Downey Jr. that we know now. Like, he was just off being, like, not famous anymore. Or, like, not famous for good things anymore.
Right,
like,
I wanna,
Iron Man, there's like a famous story that like Jon Favreau wanted him and he was uninsurable. Like
I mean,
everyone
that's crazy.
Had to take pay cuts because he was seen as such like a risk.
You tell me that Chaplin didn't put him on the A-list?
He was always considered, I mean, this, and people may not know this, and I don't want to like dredge up stuff. Robert Downey Jr. has done an amazing thing, you know, like pulling himself up. So, but like Robert Downey Jr. was always respected as an actor, but he had a lot of substance abuse issues. And when Iron Man came out, it was almost shocking that he was being put in a movie like that. So that was like a huge thing for his career as well.
Everybody loves a redemption story.
Yeah, big time.
Yeah, wasn't Chaplin like he was like highly regarded?
Oh
right?
Yeah, is yeah. I was joking, but he was actually very highly regarded for that.
That was also I think 1994.
And then all of those, like, 80s jaded youth movies that he was in. Like, yeah, I remember whenever I was, like, super pumped just that there was Iron Man. And I remember being around my mom or something. She's, like, super pumped that Robert Downey Jr. was given another chance in a movie. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like I also remember at that point, like, I knew Iron Man from the cartoon. I was not somebody who read Marvel comics as a kid. I read some of the DC comics. So the way I knew Marvel stuff was mostly from cartoon shows. And it was like, so I had this idea of like a Saturday morning Iron Man stuff, but they never went into the darker, you know, elements of Tony Stark. They never went into his like,
alcoholism,
you know, his alcoholism, his survival story of Vietnam and all this stuff. Which was the original backstory that they updated to Afghanistan for the movie, of course. But, like, you know, so I kind of just knew, like, oh, a cool guy, flying suit, you know, guns and weapons on the suit. You know, he's a cool character. He's kind of a Batman type. But, like, they went into, I remember just reading a lot of people talking about how, like, oh, man, Robert Downey Jr., like, this sort of super wealthy, famous, known to self-sabotage person, and how, like, how directly tied that was to the Stark of the comics. And then the fact that like Favreau, I mean, we really, I think fans of the Marvel Universe owe like a huge debt to Favreau, and I think it's a big part of, like, I think Disney and Kevin Feige knows they owe a huge debt to him, and that's why he keeps getting thrown these huge movies.
How does this guy keep getting work?
He kicked off this thing.
I know,
you know?
It is true, and also for the confidence with which Robert Downey Jr. came into that first movie. I mean, like, I obviously don't know how he felt internally, but that character was created within 2 minutes of it being on screen. He was like, he is the Tony Stark that we know as Tony Stark. Like, it's not like, oh, he had to find it for a while. It's like that first scene where he's in the Jeep. It's exactly it. It's fully formed. Considering that you hear that they improv'd the whole movie, which is crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that might have had to do with insurance issues as well.
Yeah.
Sure. To reinforce your point, they reinforce that character at the very end with the last scene is him in a press conference just saying, "Oh, by the way, I am Iron Man." Right?
Yeah.
And it kind of like which is kind of like symbolic of just like Marvel's whole existence being the, you know, like DC Comics, but with the lights on, like, you know, just like, oh yeah, secret identities. No, yeah, I don't concern myself with that. That's dumb stuff. And having that come out in the same year as like when Batman had to choose between, you know, the AD of the city and his girlfriend, right? Secretly, like it's a juxtaposition. And Tony Stark and Bruce Wayne have always kind of done that in the comics, I feel like, and I don't think I realized until just now, like, the movie was winking at that same kind of, like, unspoken relationship that they both have.
You know who had a great 2008? The guy who played Coleman Reese, who blackmailed Lucius Fox in Dark Knight, because he was in Iron Man. He was one of the military officers when Iron Man first...
Really?
Yeah, he's in it.
You're right.
Is he in there when Rhodey is like...
Yep.
Oh.
When he goes, it's me, Rhodey.
Yeah, he's
no,
right there,
it's
one
me.
Row down.
I am the suit.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're 100% right. That's the guy who...
And then that guy said, what are you building for him next, a rocket ship?
Real quick, I just...
Deep cut on Coleman Reese. I'm a big Coleman Reese head.
This may be moot at this point. I am just going to jump in and just... To remind people what we were talking about for phase one, we're talking about the movies Iron Man and the Incredible Hulk, which came out in 2008, Iron Man 2, which was 2010, Thor, which was 2011, Captain America: First Avenger, which was 2011, and then the first Avengers movie, which was 2012.
If I could just tell a quick story, I don't think she'll mind me telling the story. I saw Incredible Hulk in theaters with a group of friends, and my now wife was one of them, and she left before the opening credits were done. She got up and walked out. She said, nope, and then left. And the opening credits, to be fair, are horrendous.
Yeah.
Like, they
don't even remember them.
Now, this is funny. So, like, I have, for a long time, I was a long-standing holdout and defender of The Incredible Hulk as a movie. I thought it had a lot going for it. I really liked Ed Norton. And I think what it was that, like, I'm a big fan of the character Bruce Banner in The Incredible Hulk, and I think I always, like, liked that idea of a superpower that was just, like, cutting loose and leaning into your anger and then being able to, like, do that with no, like, personal physical consequences. You basically became an invincible rage machine that could, like, rip anything up, and then all the consequences came later. But I thought that the movie did a great job of, like, having Ed Norton is great at like tension and stressed out, like, you know, man on the run sort of acting and stuff. And I defended this movie for so long, and I rewatched it last week. I rewatched Iron Man, and then I rewatched Incredible Hulk, and I feel like Matt, I maybe made you watch it with me once, and I know that, like, Mike and Ryan have talked about how, like, it's better than you think, and that, like, you know, Norton could have been such a great... I just want to apologize. It's a poorly made film. It's a bad badly directed movie. It doesn't hold up, I think.
The arc of Marvel movies, you know, I mean, they just get better as they make them, right? Like,
mm-hmm. Oh,
Incredible
for sure.
Hulk at the time was far and away the best Hulk movie ever made.
right.
I think that's still happening. Some of the people who were underwhelmed by Captain Marvel, right? Captain Marvel is better than all of the movies in Phase One. Maybe not Avengers.
Disagree.
Itself,
I'll take right? I'll take First Avenger anytime.
You'll take First Avenger? Okay. Well, yep. You know, we'll get into that. But my larger point is like they're getting better at this as they go.
Every Marvel movie is better than any superhero movie we saw in the 90s.
Yeah, for sure.
Did you not watch Last Action Hero?
I do love
me some
Last Action Hero.
Any superhero movie before me, I guess I'll dis. Burton's Superman was great. Or Burton's, sorry, excuse me, Donner's Superman.
I'd love to see Burton's Superman.
They're all garbage. Any of the Christopher Reeve Supermans? Forget
that first one is kind of magic.
As like a piece of cinema history, but watch the first Superman right after watching Black Panther or Thor Ragnarok.
Oh God, yeah.
And then try and convince yourself that it's good. And that's what we
also
have going on with the Incredible Hulk now, right? Like after like Guardians of the Galaxy, I think that the four best Marvel movies are Infinity War, Guardians of the Galaxy 2, Black Panther, and Ragnarok. And they all came out in 1 year, right? Or within 1 year of each other.
Like within 12 months.
So, like, watch the original X-Men or even X2,
God.
Which people regard fairly well after any of those four. It's going to look like crap. And I
it
think
looks
that's
like
kind
a knockoff
of what the.
Now.
Yeah.
It's like so weird. And anyone who's out there saying, but what about Burton's Batman? Put on Tim Burton's Batman and watch it with someone who's never seen it before and see how it feels.
I mean, it's a circumstance of the time, though. When you get used to watching these movies this way, you can't go back. And so it's hard to judge. It's almost like people would, and I know this is not a sports podcast, when people would judge the LeBron era versus the Jordan era, the players are totally different. It's very difficult to actually say that just because LeBron is playing in this era, now Jordan's not nearly as good. I disagree, but yeah.
No, but I do understand what you're saying. Because it's like we take these things as they're coming. It's like if you watch like a hockey game from the 70s, it looks so slow.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like everything's building on top of each other. And of course, without Burton's Batman, we wouldn't have anything like this. So
to put this in Star Wars terms, right?
Ooh.
Right? Take the lightsaber duel in Episode 1. And compare it to when Obi-Wan and Darth Vader face off in Episode 4. Episode 4 is just two old men trying to figure out how to use remote controls at each other.
I love that the three Star Wars
hosts. That's what
the
choreography looks like.
The three guys on the Star Wars podcast didn't get to that comparison first. Way to go, Matt. That was pretty good. That was really nice.
That is great. My favorite thing about Iron
Man.
I told you
I vetted this guy, Mike.
My favorite thing about Iron Man 2 is that if someone was like cryogenically frozen in 2010, in July of 2010, and then they woke up and you said, want to go see a Marvel movie? They'd say, is that one of those Mickey Rourke things?
I think you mean Rockwell thing?
They would associate Mickey Rourke and Sam Rockwell with the Marvel Cinematic Universe before Chris Evans.
I was so pumped to see that Mickey Rourke was the villain, like in the when we saw the trailer, because he was just coming off The Wrestler, right?
Yep.
And Favreau was trying to go two for two with Downey Jr. and then Mickey Rourke.
yeah, right. Black Widow was also introduced in Iron Man 2.
She was, yes.
Yeah, so like, I was pumped just to see the universe expanding as much as it was, but also to see like. See, throughout these movies, too, this first phase, looking at these cast lists, that's where you can kind of tell that these movies were going to succeed, because even for the small characters that didn't matter at all, they were chasing down talented people, right? Like, Sam Rockwell is Justin Hammer.
Why? Gary Shandling's in the movie.
I was going to jump in and say that, like, with Iron Man 2... which I remember seeing. I went to the midnight showing, and I remember just being like, I was like pretty brokenhearted after it because I loved the first one so much, and I was so disappointed when I saw it. And I think it's frequently considered one of the weaker Marvel movies. It's frequently listed towards the bottom of people's like rankings, but I rewatched it pretty recently, and I will say that I think, first of all, I think it holds up way better than you probably remember it.
Yeah, it's not bad.
Second of all, you know, Justin Hammer, what we just said his name. What's his Sam Rockwell is absolutely incredible as like a knockoff Tony Stark. And lastly, I think that Monaco scene, the race like action beat, is like up there with any of the like top like movie Iron Man, you know, battle moments. Like it's a very exhilarating scene to me, I think, still today.
Says the James Bond guy.
I also
get James Bond in a freaking F1 race already. What are we waiting for? Daniel could do it.
That's crazy. That's never happened.
Speaking to what Mike was saying about kind of like you have to take these at the time, this is kind of the reverse of that, where Iron Man 2 came out and it was, you know, the third in the Marvel movies. And you're like, oh man, maybe Iron Man was a fluke because like this is not great. And so now we've had three Marvel movies, only one of them is really good, right? But now when you watch it in the context of the entire thing, you're just like, yeah, this is fun. I have 21 other of these, and this is totally acceptable.
Well, I'll tell you where I think that holds the most true in this phase one for me, which is the next movie, Thor. I really did not enjoy Thor or Thor 2 when they came out, and it was like the only way I enjoyed Thor at all was in the Avengers movies, and his Chris Hemsworth like repeated sort of success in the first Avengers movie, and then Age of Ultron, and then now, you know, like, as it's gone on, that has informed, like, now going back, I legitimately enjoy watching Thor 1 and Thor 2. And I think it's not because they are particularly great movies or well-made or better than they were when I first saw them. It's because with more cracks at the bat, like Chris Hemsworth has become so ingrained, and like now I can see that he has been doing it all along in the character. And they've gotten, and like, I don't know. I think those movies are much more fun, in rewatches now.
I remember the anticipating Thor. I remember, first of all, like as like a comic book fan, thinking like, this is going to be tough for the people around me. Because Tony Stark exists in the world as like a millionaire. And then like Marvel does make some big leaps. And I think I read that they were going to go with, you know, like, Thor is an alien and he is the defender of Midgard, right? And like, they're not going to go full blown he's a Norse god, because there is an arc in the Marvel comics where he is just a Norse god, right? And then you have to accept that mythology is suddenly real. Oh, there's a Hercules too, by the way. But I was like, right, wondering like how people were going to accept that. It's like Iron Man's established, Hulk is established. They're kind of the sciencey side of things. Now we're getting into the fantasy side of things. And at this point, I'm like, there's no way we get into the intergalactic stuff. That's never going to happen in my wildest dreams. But, you know, like, here we are. But I remember thinking that and anticipating it. And I also remember thinking, whenever I saw Kenneth Branagh was the director, I was like, oh, man, what a slam dunk. And that was so wrong.
You know, I thought this at the time, and I think this now. The first Thor movie, I describe it as cute. It was cute. You know, like, they all put on costumes, and they seem to have a nice time, and, like, it's cute.
I honestly didn't mind it. I didn't love it, but the introduction of Loki to me was a lot of fun, because I really liked what Hiddleston was doing with Loki. And to me, Thor is far superior than Thor 2. I couldn't say those two were in the same bucket to me. I think Thor 1
is really
much
like Thor 2. I said it. There's a hot and fresh. I really like Thor 2.
I enjoy Thor 2.
At least I did
2.
When I saw it in theaters.
I enjoy that, in particular, that Thor 2 has far fewer Dutch angles and that you don't feel like you need to tilt your head to watch it.
Someone watched a video from Patrick Willems.
I love those pitch angles.
I will say, yeah, Mike sent me Patrick Willems is a YouTube like a YouTube movie guy, and Mike sent us some Phase One, or just like I guess it was on all phases, but it was like a general sort of like critique and thought process on the Marvel movies and how this person actually feels like, Matt, in contrast to you, that they've been a little bit declining because of the sort of gradual reduction of stakes, like with more movies and like the story is just ongoing. So it's, I'll say, like, I did watch, it's probably about, I don't know, 30 or 40 minutes between two videos. It was interesting. It was, he makes some really, really great cases, but I don't know if ultimately I can agree, because it's like, I just have so much fun watching the new ones, you know. Like I don't notice.
I mean,
he
has a lot of fun with it, because I'm kind of in agreement with him in a lot of ways, not on all counts, but he has a lot. He says he has a lot of fun with the series. I think he's just saying that it's not just stakes. He kind of hits on a bunch of different points about why he doesn't feel more excited about Endgame, and I kind of can feel the same way. But I feel like that's probably a different discussion for a different pod, because we're still focused on Phase One at this point. But I thought calling out the filmmaking techniques of these movies is more interesting the way it becomes more homogenized as it goes on.
Which is interesting, because I think it's in like contrast to like what feels like we are in an era of like more widely ranging like genres of film within the Marvel universe. But yeah, we can jump in later. So let's get to We got Cap, the First Avenger.
Ooh, yeah.
Did anybody? Excellent. We all hated that one, right?
It was great.
When I saw it in theaters, I really didn't like it. And in the last few years, or the last like 12 months, it's become one of my favorite ones.
It is. It's an origin story, but it's a great origin story.
It's also like, and I'm saying this endearingly because. Just speaking of like the lowering stakes, like the Marvel movies have become like part of a whole, you know? It's like even when you watch like Civil War, which is awesome and a great movie, it's like part of a whole. And like Captain America the First Avenger is like a real movie in terms of like it could exist on its own and be fine.
Yeah.
I love the aspect I love of the First Avenger was that they created Captain America, and then for a good bit the military was just thoroughly annoyed with him.
Yeah.
Like, couldn't think of anything for him to do. Just go on the USO tour or something. Like,
you see, like you got to sell bombs, you see.
It gave him, like, no time of day. And that was, like, a fun thing for the movie to do. And also, this is, like, you know, all the movies kind of get into the lore pretty well, like, you know, Thunderbolt Ross, like, while there are some character choices that seemed a little campy, like they used him in a good comic booky way, and we had the Warriors 3 were like weird, but Captain America First Avenger, you get like dumb Dugan, and you get the like you get into like the weird like surrounding characters so much more and used to such greater effect than they were previously, and I think it did kind of like map out going forward, or at least like gave Marvel and, you know, eventually Disney, like I can't believe I'm finishing this sentence, gave Disney the confidence to like dip into their character stables and like flesh these people out and just like, yeah, you know, we don't need to give a background for every side character that we introduce. We can just throw them in there and let them exist as though they always have. And that's all that we need to do. Like, and they've been better off for it. And First Avengers, probably the first time I remember that really, really taking off.
The First Avenger is written by Marcus and McFeely. It's their first movie that they wrote in the Marvel franchise. And they've done all three Cap movies. They did Infinity War and they have Endgame. And is that it? I think
they have a few others in there.
They might have a few others.
I think they have a story by credit on the Dark World.
Okay. So
yeah, but I think you're right. They predominantly were Captain America writers until Civil War was Captain America, but then they got into Infinity War. Yeah.
One of the things that I think there's a handful of individuals who have really, really shaped the Marvel Cinematic Universe. We mentioned Favreau. We'll get to Whedon. I think coming up, you know, there's James Gunn. I think Ryan Coogler could be one. Sure. But like, I think these are the first. I guess John Favreau was the first, so cancel that. But Marcus and McFeely, one of the things they did that I think is really evident from the beginning with the first Avenger is like they knew Cap right away, and they did a thing that I've seen. I think it's one of the strengths. Ryan, you're probably going to cringe when I mention this name, but like one of the strengths of like David Goyer's writing in the Dark Knight movies was all of them do really great callbacks, and they have this knack for like repeated phrasing and phrases. And I guess like in the context of Captain America, you know, I'm thinking of I can do this all day, or I'm with you till the end of the line. These like really noble sentiments that come back and can like fit in any context and just cut through whatever the drama of the scene is and just like really give you pure character and like unwavering heroism. And the reason I compare to Goyer is I'm thinking of like Why Do We Fall and certain lines of like in that, you know, the Batman Begins has like a number of just like repeated phrases and like, you know, statements.
It's not who I am underneath
stuff.
It's exactly what I do that defines me.
The yeah. size of a tangerine.
Yeah. Oh man.
So anyway, I guess that was like a long and unwieldy way of saying that I think that a big part of what has made the entire franchise, the entire Marvel franchise, so strong. I mean, Marcus and McFeely have really, really done a solid job, and they defined Captain America so clearly and made him so relevant. You know, in this era when we've talked about like, you know, DC can't get Superman right, and like Captain America's old fashioned. How do you do that? And they like really figured out the way. And it starts with like this movie that is in earnest. I mean, you know, 98% of this movie takes place just like in his time, in World War II, and it gives you that. And so I think that's why we buy Cap's earnestness throughout the whole series, that Chris Evans, you know, like we were with him for, you know, that age of American heroes.
Sam, I'm going to jump in with, you were talking about defining Captain America, and I'm going to do this relatively quickly. We're getting a little bit long on the pod, and we still have Avengers to talk about. To me, there is no greater scene in the entire Marvel Cinematic Universe than the grenade scene in Captain America First Avenger. Mm. You define that character in one scene. You know everything you need to know about that character in that one scene, and it stuck with me from that moment on. I still get chills watching that scene, and I feel like I find far films even beyond the Marvel Cinematic Universe that can do that good a job with one character and tell me everything I need to know. I was so blown away by that, and Marcus and McFeely deserve so much credit for it, and I still stand by that it is one of the perfect scenes in all of Marvel.
I agree with you, and also talk about a performance that came out fully baked. I think that Chris Evans has done tremendous work throughout this entire thing. I think that he is, like, secretly the heart of the entire Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Oh, he is. And yeah, I agree.
And also, if you watch that scene where he first has his powers when he's chasing the car, he plays it so beautifully. And he also... he treats Captain America and his body as this, like, responsibility and this thing that he knows he has a responsibility to people to use. And I think that that's he plays that beautifully and like and without saying it ever, which is amazing.
All right, here it comes, hot and fresh. You ready?
Yeah.
Chris Evans has the easiest job out of everybody that's been hired in any of these Marvel movies.
Oh my god!
Why? I don't disagree. I think the grenade scene. I'm fully on board with that. I think Captain America is the every decision is, as an actor, is like laid out for him. I don't think he had to make a hard choice or really any choice about how to play Captain America or, you know, in really any script. And I think that's also the case with Captain America in the comic books, too. He never really does anything that surprises you or is interesting, except for when he, like, famously joined Hydra for a minute, but that was also a fake out, right? Like,
but what I, the only, sorry, but, like, to disagree with you is that what you're saying is that Captain America is an inherently, like, interesting character, which I completely understand. He's kind of like a Boy Scout. But if you look at that compared to what, like, the surrogate in DC would be, which is Superman, and Superman is actually consistently in movies a boring character to watch, and I don't think that Chris Evans or his version of Steve Rogers is at all a boring character to watch. He has wit. Like, it's not like he's this Boy Scout who, like, isn't aware of himself, and he plays it with, like, true wit that I think elevates it.
Language. Well, I'll jump in though and just say, like, we were talking about Superman, we're talking about Cap, and, like, I think that, like, Chris Evans has the thing that, you know, frequently people talk about Christopher Reeves being the best Superman. And Chris Reeves in the original movie, he has it's not a cool factor, but he has that Harrison Ford thing of being, like, eminently watchable and charismatic, and he's bought into the role. And the same way Chris Evans is so bought in and believable and, like, committed to, like, what he's doing. So I guess I don't know. I'll split the difference and say somewhere in the middle, which is that I do think that with the writing and the filmmaking behind it, Chris Evans was teed up to have the easiest / best job. But I also think, like, they got the guy who's charismatic enough and, like, has enough talent going on to, like, sell it.
I think time will tell. I think it will show. It will show that I am right, because Captain America will be the easiest role to recast when they do it. There will be less fan vitriol.
Ooh, casting, I don't know about that.
Casting Tony Stark is going to be tough after Robert Downey Jr. It's going to be next to impossible. I think that they'll have to gender and race bend, right? They're not going to have a Tony Stark Iron Man going forward. They'll have the Han Solo problem.
I think,
but
you might.
Captain
you
America,
might,
they can do.
It's you not. It's not right. A problem, though, when you're trying to actually fill in with a different character, because they are going to be their own character taking over the mantle. I think that works for people, or at least it does for me.
Yeah. I think it will work good. I mean, Marvel fans, anyone who reads the comics should be used to that kind of thing. So, I just think, like, if you find another square-jawed guy, like, I think he can fill those shoes.
I don't think anybody can fill that jaw in Sam's book.
That jaw. I mean, Matt, did you see this, the Super Bowl trailer where he's just like Clint, it's just working the jaw. He's just clenching it.
Oh, it's so good. It's so good.
They got it out.
Have you ever seen an actor put his tongue between his teeth and his bottom lip like that?
They got it. They got rid of the beard and they just brought the jaw out. But let's, all right.
Guys, I think we gotta cut this thing a little bit shorter. We're running long on time, and I'm going to say. I think I'm just going to take the move here is Avengers 2012. You got 30 seconds each to talk about it, and then we're wrapping up. You got no time here. We gotta move it. Go ahead.
Amazing. It's the payoff. It's the thing of thing. It's what's to come. When Thanos shows up at the end, I, like, stood up, and I think, Sam, you were there, and I looked at you, and I looked at the other people around me, and I was like, if you don't know who this guy is, this is about to get very real.
Matt did do that.
They need everybody. They need everybody. All hands on deck. And then also that movie had the first true, like, what is a splash page in a comic book, but in movie form. Whenever, like, they all assembled and, like, they did the hero landing with the fist in the ground and the Hulk was behind and then Iron Man flew in and, like, it was just like, that is what I've been waiting for my entire comic book reading life. I was waiting for that one shot, and there it was. They gave it to me. A few times, honestly.
I'll go next. it is it does fulfill everything for people that are watching it now who haven't seen it before. I think that the writing of Joss Whedon excels while his direction does not age well. It's just he was not as skilled. However, these movies were made to be watched in a very specific way, which generally is like opening weekend in a packed house. And I will say that it worked completely there. And I think that the writing holds up. And no joke, I was in LA. I was in a packed house opening night. When the Hulk picks up Loki and smashes him, I have never seen an audience lose its mind the way it did in that moment. And it's not just because it's like awesome to see. It's because the movie earns it so well. And I think that it's a beautiful moment. That along with like, that's my secret, Captain. I'm always angry. It was truly thrilling. So when you watch it and you haven't seen it before, try to imagine us all sitting there in 2012. No one had ever done anything like this. Sam.
Ryan, yeah, I'm jumping in because where are my Hulk boys at? You just named the two scenes you named are like Hulk moments. And that was what was the thing that I remember most distinctly was like I couldn't believe like A, how like long and awesome the final climactic like battle action sequence was, and also how right they finally got the Hulk. I mean, like Ruffalo's great. I'm clearly a big Hulk fan, so it was like it was so exciting to see like just from like even a visual design perspective, the way they like had him move and look in this movie was better. Ryan, the writing that Joss Whedon did to bring in like the Thor that Branagh created and put it next to Joe Johnston's Captain America and next to Jon Favreau's Tony Stark, and to have that all like work and make sense is bonkers. And I think it did. And I think it did because Whedon really, really had like the right feel for like just how to be funny, just how to be serious, how to bring these all together and like keep all of the drama of the movie truly based on the characters. I will also say, and this will be my teaser for our next episode when we get to phase two eventually, but like I think that when I saw it, Avengers 2012 was like far better and the best movie. I think with rewatches, Age of Ultron steps it up, and I think I might be more of an Age of Ultron fan. But
ooh,
and that goes all right. That speaks to the direction point, but love it.
Captain America is the heart of the MCU, and he's the heart of this Avengers film. It's the reason why I love the direction that was taken with Joss Whedon, that there is that dynamic that then builds throughout the entire series between Cap and Tony Stark. I love that Coulson is a Captain America fan with the cards, and I feel like this isn't the last time that the MCU had stakes, but it's one of the most important times because that death was felt by all the characters and felt by all of us in the audience. And then you talk about Age of Ultron, that's the last time there really was a major death. And I miss that weight. I miss those stakes. I want it to come back. And I feel like we're going to get it in part two of Infinity War Endgame. So that's where I am on Avengers. I feel like I could probably get into a little bit more of all of it. I do love the humor of it. I do love the balance. I love the way that splash page does happen. It is a movie I've rewatched probably more than anything but the Star Wars films over the last 10, 15 years. So I give a big tip of my cat to the Avengers, and I look forward to talking about Phase 2 in our next episode. Before we wrap up, though, Matt, thank you for being a part of this. We'll have you come back, I'm sure, and talk again, maybe after Endgame. Let's have you back on the pod.
Oh, man, I'd love to. Thanks for having me, everybody.
Thanks, Matt.
And Ryan, I know we didn't get a chance to do it earlier, but I know you have something to plug here before we wrap things up, if you want to get it in right before the end.
Yes, very quickly. So if you go to Droids Pod on YouTube, I've been doing Knights of the Old Republic streams where I've been doing Let's Plays. That's been really fun. Thank you for watching, any of you have. I've also started a new Let's Play channel called Coping Mechanics, where I talk about video games and their role in helping me deal with day-to-day anxiety and how they and trying to form a community where people talk about how it may help them deal with day-to-day anxiety as well. I am not a mental health professional in any way. Mike.
I'm glad that you had that disclaimer at the end. Be sure to check that out. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, DroidsPod, DroidsPod, The Droids Podcast. Email us, droidspod@gmail.com. And, of course, rate, review us on iTunes. Thank you so much for joining us. Sorry we had to wrap this up in quick fashion at the end, but that'll do it for this edition of The Droids You're Looking For, a Star Wars podcast.
We have what they grow beyond.
Annie?
You boys want to go to Galaxy's Edge?
Just for anyone who is listening on triple or double speed, that's really gonna do a number on their ears at the end.
Angela.
So should I hit stop on my record right now?